And now it's time to get started with the first hour of KSCO Presents The Doctor and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO Presents The Doctor Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Welcome to this beautiful, cloudy, rainy day in Santa Cruz today. Welcome, Mrs. Future.
Thank you.
Thank you, KSCO staff, for making it all happen. We have a very interesting show this week for you. The second hour, we're going to be talking about Democracy 2.0. Really looking at the evolution of democracy and some ideas that have been put forth of late. And Mrs. Future has been very on top of this. And we'll be also bringing in Monica McGuire, who has been tracking local politics and seeing how a lot of this can be applied to new ways of thinking about politics. So that'll be in the second hour. And this hour, we've got some news for you and also a little update. We went to Randy Masters' Cymatics conference this weekend, and that was quite fascinating.
Yes. How does matter form in relation to sound and frequency?
Yes. Vibrational phenomena. Cymatics is a fascinating arena. All things in the universe are constantly in motion, and they're vibrating. Even objects that appear to be stationary, like that chair in front of you, are in fact vibrating, oscillating, resonating at various frequencies. And so how do you look at these frequencies? Cymatics is one way of doing so, using sound and sound vibrating like sand or powder or...
Yeah, it's literally the study of sound vibrating matter and seeing what patterns are created through the sound and the relationships of different frequencies.
And what we can learn from looking at these patterns and seeing what they represent. Fascinating workshop. I met a lot of amazing people at the conference. Learned about emergent properties and how sound affects the body, how sound affects the mind, whether or not biological systems have frequencies that we can observe. Psychics talk about auras and stuff like that. Could cymatics be a way of which we could see the fields around the body?
Mm-hmm. And of course, we did interview Randy Masters a couple weeks ago, and so people did get a little bit of an understanding of how he approaches the universe with his tools from music. He uses his music theory and his understanding of harmonies and different relationships within music and applies that to all kinds of frequencies all over the radio spectrum and into the light range. And he looks for sonic resonance fields within different mediums of matter. There's all kinds of ways to think about frequency and harmony.
Yes, and certainly with some of the more esoteric, can you create matter from the vibration of sound and light? Can you actually create matter?
Right, yeah. Some of the scientists there believe that that is the beginning of matter, is when enough energy is put into a waveform and then you start having things like hydrogen or things that are materials, whereas before that they were just energy.
I guess the holy grail would be, how do you create living matter from sound and light? I don't think anyone's necessarily achieved that, but it's an interesting thought, eh?
Yes. Well, there's still a lot of debate about what's alive and what's not alive, so there's going to be quite a leap of faith to talk about how to create it out of nothing.
Indeed. Meanwhile, we'll stick with effective acoustic massages.
There you go. That sounds good. Right. Tuning forks as a form of fluffing your aura. I think that was your contribution.
That's true. Yeah. Randy really likes tuning forks. He builds tuning forks of all kinds of different frequencies, and you can get all kinds of interesting effects from tuning forks. Real pure vibrational sound energy, unlike electronically generated sound.
Yeah. You know, he was demonstrating that if you take two tuning forks that are, their frequencies are different from each other by about 10 hertz, then that can balance your brain in such a way.
Collaboration.
Your hemispheres. Yeah. That
yes.
He has had some success alleviating headaches for himself. things like that.
Simply with a little bit of sound treatment.
Yeah, yeah, just by using resonant frequencies.
So sound is a very potent form of feeling good. It doesn't even have to be music. It can be pure frequencies. And there's also evidence to suggest that various processes in our biology respond to sound as well. Mm. Like certain hormones can be released through certain sound frequencies. Mm-hmm. Like endorphins, for example. Mm-hmm. It can be very key to our health is to play with sound as part of our understanding of what makes us well.
Yeah. And beyond what we're hearing with the sound frequencies, there's also what we're seeing. And so there's a real beautiful component of how the sound frequencies are creating amazing geometries and beautiful symmetrical patterns and things that give you a real good feeling just by seeing them, and the synesthesia between the two of what you're hearing and what you're seeing and how that's all working together.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful stuff. It also got me thinking about whether or not sound can cancel out sound so effectively that we could, say, create an environment where it's acoustically isolated from other rooms nearby. Wouldn't that be a great new freedom to be able to acoustically cancel everything around you outside of the room that you're in?
So imagine how much the neighborhood would be improved if the people who love to have loud music could be perfectly harmonious next door to people who love to have silence.
And none of that on your ceiling with a broom because your sound is too high.
Sure.
Or
just
how many
put
parties
you into a
could happen.
Sound cancellation dome.
Yes.
The dome of silence.
Right. Get smart. Right. Yes. That kind of technology is starting to arise now. Well, we have it in headphones, but we don't have it in rooms yet.
As far as we know.
As far as we know, right. Yeah.
Right.
But I think that would be a whole new freedom to have acoustic. We kind of do that at the KSCO studios here, right? We got that thick sound insulation between the rooms.
Sure.
And it sort of works.
Yeah.
But be able to do that just electronically would be something. So the Cymatics Workshop was fun. I met some amazing people who know even more than I do about virtual reality and stuff, which was really great. And I've got some new playmates to check out the virtual worlds together. I'm excited to play in those arenas more.
Right. Yeah, another area where being able to see the relationships of sound and light in whole new forms.
Yes, because in virtual worlds, you can create what they call spatialized audio. Spatialized audio means it's truly three-dimensional audio, like how you walk around a room and the sound changes depending on where you're at and where people are.
Sort of like reality.
Kind of like reality.
If there's
that's
a bird
right.
chirping, it's over there. Well, if there's a chair squeaking, it's over there.
Right.
If there's a song playing on the radio, it's behind you.
Yeah, that's a big part of sound is its location as well as its volume and what it is. But the location, that spatialized audio is now possible in our virtual worlds. So that's something we'll be exploring more in depth as we go on in this explorations of the new media.
Hmm. Okay, it looks like we have a phone call.
Do you want to hold on for after the break?
We'll take us.
Yeah?
Okay, yeah, hold on till after the break, and we'll be right back with more Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. So we have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Yes, we do. Let's say hello to Leroy from Gilroy.
Hey,
welcome
Leroy.
To the show.
How you doing?
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm wondering if you're familiar with Dr. David Gallenberger, and he practices psychokinetic energy techniques and using psychokinesis. And one of his classrooms is after he teaches the techniques, he takes his students to a classroom called Las Vegas.
And
puts them into the casinos, and if they're practicing the technique right, they walk out with pockets full of cash. Now, he works on not just making money, but abundance of health.
Abundance thinking, sure, yeah.
Are you familiar with him?
No, I just did a Google search. I can't seem to find anything directly. There's a Dr. David Kallenberger, who's an obstetrics and gynecology guy, but I don't think that's him. It's probably something else, eh?
Where did you come across him, Leroy?
Yeah.
Just in my extensive research and intensive investigations into the mind, the spirit, the inner spirit, and he works out of the concept of love being the foundation and taking the spiritual energy that's in the universe. We're all electric and we're all electromagnetic energy.
Yes.
Surrounding us. And what he teaches is taking and putting love into Mother Earth and drawing it back up. And taking the love in the universe and the love within your spirit and your body and your DNA, and it's infused into the heart. And then with your mindset on the spiritual love that you've created, you're able to use that electromagnetic energy within the body to affect things around you and draw toward you abundance of good health, abundance of healing, abundance of wealth, abundance of everything.
Right.
The psychokinetic energy that the techniques that he's used, I was practicing it, but I didn't know it. And when I ran across him, I said, oh, that's what they call it.
I see. So did it work for you? Did you find new abundance in your life? Did you find yourself getting healthier and wealthier and wiser?
Yes, I'm practicing it. It's on the level of what the Buddhists use in Tibet and Nepal and when they go inside of themselves. And you find the monks can levitate themselves. And so we do have an effect on the things around us. And that's what I was looking for, is the spiritual energy that was within me.
Yes.
And how I could use it to heal myself. Well, I come out with $21,000 out of the casino down in Lemoore.
That's pretty good. And then how's your health?
I'm a totally disabled Vietnam combat veteran. I'm an amputee, and I've spent my whole life wrecking my body doing dangerous and exciting things. So everything that's broken within me is affected by the marine layers that come in off the ocean, I can tell you, 2 days before a storm hits.
Oh, so, you're a living barometer, huh?
Absolutely. And the spiritual energy within me is, yes, it's very effective. And he practices something that most people don't know. You can use the mind and think about doing this, but he says when you use the sound of your voice, you do the mantras in a verbal context. You orally speak the mantra, stating things like, I will command my DNA to do such and such, to go to my liver, my heart, my respiratory system, and heal it. Mm-hmm. And when you focus on that and you speak it out loud, you're not just using your mindset, but the sound waves and the vibrations and frequency that are within you, you raise those levels to match what it is you want to do.
Yes, yeah, that kind of ties in with what we were talking about with cymatics and the effect of sound on matter. And intention, speaking out loud, increases your intention. And if you focus on the right things, you can do miracles.
Absolutely. And you're right on with that.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your call.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
So, really great.
And that's Dr. David Kallenberger?
Is that Kallenberger with a G as in golf. Kallenberger. And Kallenberger. I think he's out of Columbia University. I'm not quite sure. I'd have to look it up again, but... Yeah, he's on the web.
Dr. David Kallenberger.
Right.
I said Inner Vegas, creating miracles, abundance, and health. Got it. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for your call. And Jet to Joe Kallenberger.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Stay safe and God bless. I appreciate your work. Thank you so much.
You too.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was a big focus of the cymatic studies, was its ability to heal ourselves and self-healing and the intention that we put behind our words and our focus. Very, very powerful thing. Simple yet profound insights into the nature of the world we're in.
That's right. Yeah, beliefs, they're very important. They definitely lead the way to what we create.
drive us to health or illness, depending on
what we affirm, our intentions.
Yeah, it does remind me. We do have a few Dr. Future stories to share with you this hour. One of which I thought was very interesting. It was part of a new field in the tech world called invisible computing.
Invisible computing. Oh, I see. So we can't see this computer, huh?
No, you can't. The example of this that was put out there this week in the tech news is something from Mojo Vision, a California startup that's created a smart contact lens. So you put this contact lens in, and it has a whole augmented reality display that is put into your field of vision.
Wow. So, contact lens for your screen, huh?
Right. It like puts a computer screen in your eye, essentially. No one else can see it but you. It overlays on top of what you're seeing already, or part of your vision, an area of your vision screen. And it provides you with information and allows you to interact by looking at things. Like, you'll give you a menu choice. Should I look at my email right now? And, you know, and it'll, you look at that for like 5 seconds, and then suddenly it triggers off your email. So you can basically click just by your intention of looking and maintaining a fixed focus on a particular line of text in your field of vision. It's a rigid contact lens. The company has been developing it in stealth mode for about 10 years. The initial users are people with visual impairments such as retinitis pigmentosa and macular degeneration.
I see.
Yeah. Corporate executives of the company gave a demonstration to the press recently on how it would allow users to see a virtual teleprompter, how you could navigate instructions and interactions through the floating menus. And it uses a projected micro LED display right onto the retina.
Oh, boy. So it treats your eye like it's the screen.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe that somehow you were focusing on something that was on the lens itself, like augmented reality. But no, this is actually a projector that's putting light on
directly
your,
on your
nerves.
Retina, yes.
Mm, wow.
It puts these overlays for low vision people who may need some help in mobility or reading and other such functions. The company has raised $100 million already for this.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people interested in how to create something this small that can be an interface for the vast information available on computers.
Yes, indeed. The contact lens aims to enable people to move away from physical devices and interact more naturally with the technology. It's away from bulky headsets or carrying gadgets.
Although I can't imagine putting something in my eye. I mean, I can't even put in a tiny flexible contact lens, much less a hard little computer screen with all of the apparatus it needs to be plugged in.
Well, you know, if you already are suffering from vision loss, you probably wouldn't mind so much to have some addition to your eye that it vastly increases its capacities. The company will be testing its vision-enhancing applications with the Vista Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Palo Alto, California.
Oh, boy. Coming to a neighborhood near us.
That's right. So that's an example of invisible computing.
A little smart contact lens by Mojo Vision.
Google also claims its Nowcast is a new short-term weather predictions that are more accurate than advanced computer models for weather. It's deep learning-based weather forecasting tool for predicting short-term weather events. There's an article we have on our drfutureshow.com/links page that goes into depth about how deep learning algorithms can be used for creating much better weather prediction. Because weather's always been an inexact science. And it can always be better than what it is. This approach involves collecting data from a variety of sources and making them available via the net. The neural networks are being trained to recognize weather patterns and make predictions that are nearly instantaneous. They call it nowcasting. So that's up on the net for you to check out.
All right. Well, sounds good.
At drfutureshow.com/links.
See if deep learning
Nowcasting.
See if that's better than people. for knowing what's going on with the weather.
Yeah.
Time for a break.
See you after the break, folks. And now a little bit of outer space news. SpaceX's in-flight abort test.
Oh, yes. We were watching on Sunday, and it sounds worse than it was.
Well, it's not every day that a successful test of a rocket involves destroying the launch vehicle in mid-flight.
That's right. It was planned.
Yes, SpaceX managed that feat during their in-flight abort test Sunday morning. It was an important milestone in the development of commercial human spaceflight.
And why is that?
Because with the completion of the in-flight abort test, it's the last major event before an actual crew goes on board.
Ooh, we've been waiting for this a long time.
So basically, you had to fire the rocket and then blow up the rocket and then have the capsule escape the explosion of the rocket and land safely. So
right.
We want to make sure the crew's safe in the event that something goes wrong with the rocket. And that's what they did. And when it was a successful test.
So the crews going up on the future SpaceX missions will be in this Dragon capsule?
That's right. The Dragon capsule will be going up a little later this year, the second quarter of 2020. I think they're estimating it right now. And there'll be astronauts Douglas Hurley and Robert Behnken, the Crew Dragon. They'll be going to and from the International Space Station. When it does happen, it will usher in that new era of commercial human spaceflight.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer having to jump on board Russian Soyuz spacecraft to get to the International Space Station. So, which is great, because right now it's mostly been Russia and China. Now it'll be back. The U.S. will be taking human beings back into low Earth orbit.
Right. What kinds of things are they going to be doing once they take people up to space?
Well, the Crew Dragon will not only be able to take astronauts, but will have extra seats for the well-heeled and adventurers who want to pay a lot of money for the adventure of a lifetime.
Oh, so they're going to be taking tourists.
That's right.
Kind of like Virgin Galactic.
Virgin Galactic. Yeah, well, kind of like is understatement. With the Crew Dragon, if you go up on a Dragon, a space trip, you'll actually go to the International Space Station in low Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on the Virgin Galactic trip, which will also be this year, you'll basically be going up for like 5 minutes in space and then coming back down again.
Mm.
You're not really going to the space station. You're just going into zero gravity and float around for a while and eat your M&Ms from floating in the midair around you.
Ah, so you're going for a zero gravity ride.
Yeah.
It's a little more of a roller coaster experience.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit more. So a little bit more exciting than a roller coaster and a little bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm. But you won't have any ISS robot arm grabbing your vehicle and inviting you into the Bigelow chamber of the ISS or...
Or hanging out with the Russians drinking vodka. No, you won't be doing any of that.
You'll have to get onto a SpaceX Dragon crew module for that experience.
Yes, okay. Yes, in the current unfoldment here. Of course, you know, Boeing will be having their capsule ready soon, too. And that'll be later this year as well, so we'll have a choice.
Oh, good. All right.
But still, it's going to be very expensive.
Yeah, I know all of these companies are basing their tourist tickets at about $200,000.
Eventually, going up on the Crew Dragon is going to be a bit more than that initially.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, probably at least $1 million.
Well.
So that's unfolding, and the final test was done, and we'll now be seeing an actual crew going up on the SpaceX Dragon flights in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Also this week, SpaceX is launching another flight, a Falcon 9, that will be launching 60 more satellites in low Earth orbit for the Starlink project.
Oh, boy.
For the internet, for the global internet.
Yeah, they're going to be launching every 2 weeks now, right?
That's right, 60 each time.
Mm-hmm.
And this will create the world's first high-speed internet connectivity for all around the world. be really interesting. So that's probably going to be by Friday when the next Starlink shipment goes into operation.
Right. I want to just mention a few of these space companies that are highlighted in this article because I think what's going on is very exciting. So we have companies like Bigelow and Axiom, and of course their goal is to develop private space stations. So they're actually going to be creating destination islands that you can fly to on these vehicles once the vehicles are in place.
Well, you'll have a hotel up there. Remember the Hilton in 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Right.
Yeah, something like that.
And then we also have a company that has already been experimenting on the International Space Station. And this company, I love the name, it's called Made in Space.
Yeah.
They're already doing different kinds of experiments about what kinds of things you can develop in zero gravity.
Yes.
More easily than here on Earth.
Yes, they're thinking, for example, that it might be easier to grow spare organs in space. Organs like in your body, kidneys and livers and such. Hmm. And that the zero gravity might be more conducive to creating spare organs.
Well.
So there'll be spare organ farms in low Earth orbit.
If they're right
about that. If they're successful,
that.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, I know you have your possible.
Well, I just remember the early experiments with watching plants grow, and the absence of gravity actually caused the plants to be dwarfed because it's sort of like if you don't go to the gym and work out, you don't get muscles. So gravity is playing a very important role in the creation of our biotissues.
One of the things you could do, though, in zero gravity is that you could control the gravity. You could have like 1/3 gravity or 1/2 gravity. Mm. And you can change the amount of gravity depending on what phase of growth that you're dealing with.
I see. Sure.
You know, you can control the horizontal. You control the vertical. Gravity becomes a variable, put it that way. And that might be useful in the
part of your design process
of growing organs.
Absolutely. I'm sure they use centrifuges now for similar kinds of reasons.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So also in space news, Elon Musk has revealed how you could pay for a trip to Mars.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's he going to do? Lend us some money?
Yeah, he's going to lend you $250,000. That's the goal, ultimately, is that it'll cost the same as the average house in America to move to Mars. So if you want to go to Mars, it'll cost you the equivalent of a house.
I don't know too many houses in California that are $200,000. He's talking about houses elsewhere.
Yeah, you get the RV on Mars. Location. You can deal with your own air. Now, they're planning to build a 1 million-person city on Mars to be going strong by 2050.
Right. Well, he did declare that there's going to be a labor shortage on Mars, so there should be a lot of opportunities.
Yes, we need laborers on Mars. He's proposing a loan system where visitors would work in the Mars city to pay back the cost of the flight. Now, didn't we have something like that in the founding of America? Wasn't it a indentured servitude or something like that?
Oh, no.
One step beyond slavery.
You'll never work it off. Once you get to Mars, you'll be indebted to SpaceX forever.
You want oxygen for your kids? Keep working.
This article does not say any of this. This is all manufactured in your imagination.
Well, not all of it. The million strong city on Mars by 2050 is in the article. Mm-hmm. The loan system.
No, but he's talking about people applying for jobs and using that to cover the costs
loans.
Of going to Mars.
Yeah. Musk suggested that a return ticket would cost around $500,000.
There you go. That's the expensive part. Going out there is cheap. Returning, that's when it gets expensive.
Possibly dropping to $100,000 over time. Back in 2016, he said $200,000 to go there. Mm. Between and the developing the city would cost up to $10 trillion.
Mm.
It's a lot of money.
Right.
A lot of Teslas need to be sold for that.
I like this quote that they have in the article, which was from 2018 South by Southwest.
Yeah.
And Musk was there and he was talking about the flights to Mars were compared to Shackleton, who, of course, was the Antarctic explorer. And he apparently placed an ad that said that he wanted people who were ready for a trip that was difficult, dangerous, and a good chance that you'll die.
Sign me up. Yeah.
And now he wants you to pay for the privilege. I'll tell you, this guy is quite the entrepreneur, huh? He really knows how to sell stuff.
Visit Mars, where it's never warmer than 0 degrees. Actually, 0 degrees centigrade, which is pretty warm.
There you go. No sunbathing allowed.
You can't breathe the atmosphere.
Right. Oh, no wonder it's so expensive. No wonder people are paying to get back.
Yeah. The thing is, you want to invest your energy in building the city. I would imagine they would put under a dome or something, though, you know, so that you don't have to wear a spacesuit every time you want to go outside.
I mean, this article has the proposed map of the Martian colony. And it starts with the landing stations where the giant rockets can land. And of course, they'll be, in effect, the RV. They'll be the colony RV while they build out the space station. The space station is a whole bunch of tubes that go to domes that form the future civilization.
And a lot of it's underground, too, of course, with the boring company's tunneling technologies to connect everything to everything else without having to go above the ground. I think a lot of subterranean lifestyle elements will be included in this movie if you want to go to Mars.
It'll probably be warmer and down there than on the surface.
Yeah, if you like being indoors, if you like being underground, this is for you. This is the place to go. And after all, our species spent millions of years in caves. Certainly, it's part of our DNA in many respects. So, hey, this is an opportunity to reactivate those aspects of your code. There you go. It's SpaceX Mars City by 2050. And you can get a loan to go there. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. Speaking of Mars, NASA is definitely keeping an open mind when it comes to naming its Mars 2020 rover. The names for the semifinalists have been whittled down from 28,000 to 155 semifinalists.
Oh boy, really closing in on it there. Yeah. What are they going to pull it out of a hat?
Well, yeah, I don't know. At the final phase, you can browse through the entries. You can read the essays and start rooting for your favorite. Will it be Dusty? Because the Mars is dusty after all.
Red Dusty.
Or will it be Ambition Tardigrada, a tribute to the miraculous powers of the water bears? Now, I think it's a little flat on that one. How about Fido, Fearless Information Data Officer? No? Ride?
Where is this list that you're looking at?
It's in there. NASA narrows down Mars 2020.
Oh, okay.
They have volunteer judges narrowing down it even further. And there are some very popular repeat names like Tenacity or Determination. You know, some of these have been tried to be applied to the other rovers before this. Perspective, Possibility. Remember the ones we have up there now, Mrs. Future? Remember the names? Curiosity?
Curiosity, Opportunity.
Opie, for short.
Opie, right. Yeah.
Spirit.
There you go. That was the first one, right?
Yeah. Well, not the very first.
Curiosity.
The very first one was back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. The Viking.
Oh, right.
The Viking 1 and 2, the first Mars landers for the American side. Mm. They're going to announce the winner in March. NASA will announce the winner in March. A public vote will be the final determiner.
Oh, boy.
Yes, this rover is leaving Earth in July and arrives on Mars in early 2021. Mm-hmm. Hopefully still up there when Curiosity will still be running.
Okay, well, you can go to mars.nasa.gov/Mars2020 and get all kinds of information about that mission.
Yeah, it's an amazing rover. We've covered it a few times, and we'll continue to do so as we get closer. It's a new type of rover. It's got a lot of amazing capability, and one of its major missions will be to find evidence of life either now or before that may have existed on Mars in the past. It's going to a wet area or an area that used to be a lake bed on Mars.
Boy, you could really do a poem just of the names that have been suggested for the Mars rover here.
Yeah, you going to do one for us?
Well, you've got wonderment. I think wonderment's a really nice word. Wonderment, promise, prospector, calypso, grit, rosé, enlightenment, propulsion major crater. That's her real nerd name.
Major.
And then we have several nominations for possibility. Yeah, possibility is nominated more than once, so I guess that's a real possibility.
It becomes a probability. Oh, that's a good name, too. Hey, and, probability. And it,
yeah. I love this row here. We have possibility, determination, and mystery all in the same line.
We should have one like Mr. Spock.
Well, call there's it, Marv.
Call it fascinating.
There's reconnoiter.
Reconnoiter. Yeah, let's go to reconnoiter and for a live report.
The final entries are adventure and inspiration. So
it sounds like the names of ships.
They do, don't they? Yeah, I think they will be.
Well, it is a kind of a ship in a way.
So that's some of the finalists from the Name the Rover Challenge.
Yeah, so March. We'll know in March what's up with that.
Right. All right. Jeff Bezos saving the expanse.
Right. Yes. Jeff Bezos saved the expanse. That was really great. We have a fascinating article about how he ponied up for the final season of The Expanse, which is a space opera that takes place in the solar system.
Right. And of mostly. Course, we love that TV series. It's a really fun little binge-worthy episodic tale.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's a good space opera. The only thing that bothers me about it is that so much of the motivations and everything is what you find in every other TV show. You would think that when we go into The Expanse, we would get into different models of thinking, like abundance thinking, for example, mm-hmm. or more spirituality, or the living universe, or something interesting along those lines. But it's kind of a continuation of the rule sets that we have today, which means that the writers are mostly not science fiction people.
Well, it seems like it takes from Blade Runner kinds of universe where the exterior colonies are lower class mining colonies. And of course, they're full of rebels and people who feel like they're not getting a fair shake.
Yeah, the usual human.
And then Mars is full of warriors, of people who went there to colonize with a passion and they follow the rules because they have a 100-year plan for how to turn Mars into a habitable planet.
Yeah, what I like about The Expanse is some of the explorations of this alien technology, the proto-molecules, the whole proto thing.
Right. And yeah, that's not your average sci-fi alien, is it?
That's a little more interesting, yeah.
It's more like a psychic alien that takes over your brain and communicates directly to your thoughts.
Well, it plays with matter itself. It's intelligence and matter itself, which is, I think, a little more closer to reality. Mm-hmm. You know, smart matter, if you will, that has a life of its own. Mm-hmm. The Expanse is in for a season 4, and they do take it outside of the solar system there. They do have these rings that give you access to other parts of the universe.
Uh-huh. So, of course, the big stumbling block, even though this show was really popular with the fans, the special effects were very expensive. So as they went into their new season, they needed somebody who loved the show enough to spend the money. Yeah. Jeff Bezos, I guess, was a big fan, so it got another year.
Yes, and it is on Amazon Prime, so they feel free to use more language, more blue language, if you want. It's a little more gritty, which is pretty cool. It's definitely worth checking. I like the fourth season the best so far.
Right. All right. Big fans of The Expanse.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And one other space news. Scientists have discovered strange objects orbiting around our galaxy's black hole.
Oh, I love this article. You can learn so much about our galaxy in this article and so much about how discoveries are made in terms of things like black holes. Black holes have not been even part of the scientific landscape for that long.
1974, when we discovered there was a black hole in the center of our galaxy. And then since then, we've discovered that there are black holes in every galaxy that we found so far, that black holes are a normal part of galactic culture, if you will. Astronomers found something unexpected near our massive black hole, which is known as Sagittarius A, or pronounced the Sag A star. It's a Sag A. They found four mysterious objects, each similar to a pair of bizarre bodies spotted in recent years in this same region of the galaxy. Our Sagittarius A black hole contains roughly 4 million times as much mass as the sun. 4 million times the size of our sun.
And a black hole, it sounds so empty, and yet you just made it sound so full.
It's big. It's big. Now, these G objects that have been spotted near our Sag A, they have 100 to 1,000 year long orbits around the black hole. And they appear compact most of the time, and they stretch out as they come closer to the black hole near the core of our galaxy.
Hmm. That's what happens when you get too close to that much gravity.
They're called G objects. They're labeled G1, G2, all the way to
G6.
G6, right. G1 was originally discovered in 2005, and then 7 years later they found G2, and then the G3 through G6 after that. They're really strange motions. We had never seen anything quite like it. They've been trying to analyze, what the hell is this? They've mostly been studied from the Keck Observatory in Mauna Kea, and there's no broad consensus yet of what they are. But what they appear to be are some kind of something as big as a star system, big as a star. And they think that they were pairs of binary stars, which, as they got close to the galactic center, merged into a single object. So a lot of the star systems in our local galaxy are binary stars. Ours is unique. Our star is not a binary. It doesn't rotate around another star. But most of the stars in our system are binary, and they have companion stars. Now, when they get close to the black hole in the center of the galaxy, they get pulled together. They get merged into a single object. And that's what they think the G objects are, these merged binary star systems. Or at least that's one of the top theories right now. When they get close to they orbit around in these asymptotic orbits. They're not circular orbits. They're kind of elongated. They come in really close, and then they go far away, and then come back again over a period of like 100 years. And when they get close, a bunch of star matter is ripped off of them. And you can see that. It's really fascinating to look at. They've got some great pictures. Anyway, this is up on our webpage at drfutureshow.com/links. Check it out, the strange G objects near our center of the galaxy.
Coming up next
is something entirely different for you. Democracy 2.0. Where are we going to take our government in the near future? We have Monica McGuire in the studio, just arrived. Hi, Monica.
Hello.
Good to see you. All right, okay, say hi again for us.
So happy to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hi.
Looking forward to chatting right after the news.
Yeah.
And this is Monica McGuire.
KSU.
Democracy 2.0 coming right up.
This is KSU Santa Cruz. Dr.